function, one purpose via two things, and one of the things could be considered redundant, not necessary. But it works.
Oh, shit, I never realized. So is Hendiades is always comprised of a redundancy?
Yes.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
No, it's very subtle if you look at the dictionary.
Okay.
So we never needed non-physical, but we decided to fall. So we redundantly created a non-physical to help us get back to the original complete physical. So we didn't need to do it. So it's been a hendiadic process, this whole interaction with the non-physical and the guff. We didn't need to die, but we wanted to enhance our life by dying, make a drama out of it. It was already dramatic enough.
There's something about the interplay between the two.
Yeah.
Then
it's the essence of tactility. Tactility is the interplay. It's involved with the senses, but not a sense. Which, you know, what does that mean? It's not a sense, but it's involved, you know. It sounds like tactility is the redundant organizer of the sensory data to make coherent consciousness, which isn't required. It's already coherent, but the mind says, no, it's not coherent.
Now, when you're using that, you're talking about tactility. You're talking about when you lift your finger, when you touch your finger onto something, you lift it up, and then you touch it again onto something. That
yes.
In-between space, that interval is the tactility you're talking about, right?
Yeah, the ability to let go. If you couldn't let go and enter the empty space and then retouch, you wouldn't have flexibility. You'd be just stuck to everything. It's like a slight anti-gravity, you know. Okay, I'm now standing here. I can jump up and leave gravity and temporarily get out of gravity, and then I'm brought back down into the gravity and reconnect with the floor. So that interval is beat and rhythm.
Right. It's what informs in between the touching parts, the part that we recognize.
Right. It's a good description of what, it's like everybody is supposedly the same individual. They go through the same ascension process, yet everybody's unique. So the interplay of the group and the individual is sort of like endiades, or like tactility.
Oh, sure.
It's very subtle variation to create variety. I think Gregory Bateson said it's a difference that makes the difference.
Now, can you bring the discussion of pressure into that thought?
No,
Madeline can't take it.
That discussion.
Really? Last week it didn't work for you?
Oh no! And I listened to it. I had issues.
Well, the hand
that a bunch of times, actually. I've never got past freaking 1 a.m. because of that. And it's
right, well,
really...
Okay, well, how about this? Pressure would be the environment of contrast. So the hand is going up and down, beating away, but it doesn't notice that the temperature's gone down 100 degrees or something, and it starts to freeze. So that would put an environmental effect on the hands, and they'd have to put mittens on or something. I'm thinking of pressure as a leaking out and an unknown environment that's going around that's going to influence the interplay. Like if you have two people talking,
sure,
a third person shows up, and that one of the people doesn't like the third person, and it's known, and the third person's standing there, pressure is created, right?
Yeah.
It's a very subtle, it's almost tactility.
Pressure and tension?
Yeah, I feel more tension than pressure. What would you
okay.
call the
tension?
Pressure?
Tension. Well, tension is a tightening of your nervous channel. So I'm thinking of
pressure
as something that constricts. Maybe that's not what pressure is.
That's the kind of pressure for sure.
But maybe not the only kind. Maybe there's eight kinds of pressure. 14 degrees of freedom, eight kinds of pressure. I mean,
this is the thing. There are so many kinds of pressure, it becomes meaningless. I thought that was a useless conversation.
Right. Well, most of this description is useless. In other words, payday, an ion coming forth and talking is Hendiades. It doesn't need to be done, but it does add something to life to do it, to divide it and make it. And make a thing happen. Ion has nothing to say. I mean, I'm saying now that ion's going to demonstrate rapidity of change by how rapidly it goes through its communication. That it has to use words to communicate that. That it's not any particular message. It's the expression of pressures among proportions among the golden section, Fibonacci speaking.
But it's the act of doing that that breaks up patterns for anyone who engages.
Yeah, you don't sound like Susanna, but your voice reminded me of Susanna. Where the fuck's Susanna been the last few weeks? She came on the chat line, and what's happened? Did anybody know?
She's having a little trouble creating space where she can engage.
Oh, she's got people. She's got people staying with her?
Yeah.
Okay, so she has pressure. She's got pressure. See, there it works.
She's got a little pressure.
which is the outer kingdom tactically interplaying with you. It's an outer kingdom thing that you invent. Like, she could ignore the pressure, but it's often hard to get rid of that pressure.
Yeah, that tends to increase it.
But
right.
she's listening to revelations. My theory is she's listening to revelations, and that creates contrast regardless of what's going on. You know,
right, and she's going through the learning process, which requires privacy for a while.
Yeah, and it creates contrast. As you know, it breaks up those patterns in your thought process, just listening to revelations itself, I think.
And then that affects your interpersonal relationships, willy or nilly, right? Whatever the phrase is. And then you start having contrast around you.
In a variety of ways, your perception has changed. I don't know. In my experience, my perception was changing rapidly, and I couldn't hold on to anything, and it did create contrast in my physical environment.
Right. Hey, Madeline, I just thought pressure is tactility becoming a sense. Approaching particularity. It's almost like the first stage of the fall. So no pressure on the ascended. When they fall slightly, they start getting pressure, or they feel pressure, or they create pressure, which is a tactile interplay with something that is bugging you or making you move or making you uncomfortable. See? So, pressure may be the first stage of experiencing tactility.
That's interchangeable with contrast.
Yes. Well, Ion said
that
tactility is contrast. No, Ion defined contrast as tactility. So, so that fits, you know.
And the tactile interval was described way back a couple years ago, I heard it, I think, as the essence of creation. So, sure.
Right. No. You have to have contrast to create.
Well, exactly. I was saying it's the same. It's been said before. Not by Ion,
right,
though. That was someone else you were talking to.
Right. No, but it fits Ion. So pressure is sort of the ground of tactility becoming noticeable figure.
Omerage.
Omerage, yes. Resistance, yep. It could be omerage. Now, these are, do we need to know any of this? I mean, did people always talk? Where did they have to, did somebody start, the apes? McCoon says that we didn't begin with tribal man, that way before that there was isolated cavemen or whatever, maybe ascended things, and they didn't engage in group behavior. And then someone started to come around like a virus and started grunting and bugging people and making interesting grunts, and everybody started responding to the grunting.
If they didn't engage in group behavior, then how did they exist? I mean,
well, they were ascended, if they were ascended, then they had it all. It didn't matter. They didn't need anything. But if they weren't, they just survived whatever they could come up with.
But didn't we get language from the Sumerians or another more advanced?
Oh, I never heard of that. We don't know where language came from. No one knows.
But it is a fragmentation.
Yeah, it's Hindiades. It's somebody making sounds that are redundant. You know, the first guy comes up grunting. The others are going, "We know that. We know that. Shut up."
You said that already.
They came up against tactility.
Stop repeating yourself.
Well, isn't it until, I mean, when we developed the point of view, we had to express it. So, I mean, as pre-tribal
didn't have points of view. They began with verbum and grunts. But you know what the first thing was gesture. So you're looking at somebody, and they suddenly get a weird look in their face, and you don't know what emotion are they going through. So they're trying to tell you what the problem is, and he keeps pointing over there, and you're trying to figure out where he's pointing to. Then you finally look, and there's a big rattlesnake eating you, you know. And the other guy had a shocked look on his face. That was the first communication.
They still do that on the reservation, by the way.
The first guy didn't realize he was being eaten because he didn't know he had feet.
He didn't have a point of view.
Yeah, he didn't have a point of view. And he looked back at the guy being shocked, and he fucking disintegrated the rattlesnake or the cobra. And the shocked guy, "Fuck, how'd you," he goes, with another shock, "how'd you do that?" And so it was, and then the center person never reacted to the shock look. So the little guy just kept getting shocked and shocked and shocked. He was endless cycle of being shocked for the reaction that unfolded in front of him.
Again, you go on down there past the liquor store onto your right there, and Johnny Chuck Daw, he down there behind the volleyball ball. He done blew his brown brains out there, over there.
So that was years later. That was during civilization when they had actual words. We're talking about earlier phases where they just looked at each other.
Before the liquor store?
Yes, long before the liquor store. Like somebody comes up, he walks up to you, and he takes a sharp blade, or he takes a big boulder, and he drops it on himself, and he's dead. And you look at him and have no reaction. And another ape looks at him, and he has sort of a reaction, but you don't care about his reaction. That would be the beginning of falling, how much the reactions congealed into a group consensus that this was a tragedy, that the boulder landed on your buddy.
Yeah, you look at the other person's reaction and you learn. You think that's the reaction.
You think you're the person. You're the other person. You learn about yourself through others.
So you know who
survived that? You know who survived that was the autistic person who couldn't respond to anybody and never fucking registered anything and remained ascended. And so the young kids are coming through trying to retrieve autism as ascension.
That's it. No point of view. That's the new human.
I just consider them space aliens.
Do you think this is a unique conversation? Do you think George Neary, what's the name of the guy on Bell?
Nori.
George.
Nori.
Yeah.
Nori.
How do you spell it? Nori?
N-O-R-Y.
Right. Would George Nori tolerate this kind of conversation on his show?
It might be too advanced for him.
It would be.
It depends on the guest.
Yeah. Poor guy. He's controlled by his audience.
You need to talk.
Richard,
you need to talk to him.
I saw that he didn't respond to you.
What'd you say?
Irrelevant.
Yeah, no, you're saying George didn't respond to me?
I said poor Randy. He didn't
respond. Oh, yes, I tried to keep it going. I appreciated you supporting me in there.
Well, it's pretty funny. I almost attempted to respond to him, but then luckily you jumped in before I did.
Yeah, and I mean, what was good is I made a good point.
You didn't even read that. He couldn't make that comment if he had actually read that article.
That's right.
Yeah.
I think he just thinks he's doing a big deal just trying to bug me. But I appreciate what he did because I got to say something I never typed out before because he was saying that McLuhan said that we were in cattle pens. And that's partly true, but McLuhan was saying a long time ago. But the important point is McLuhan said there was a breakthrough implied in the new decentralized media. And that's the big thing that you got to notice. And Randy should have noticed that, either said, oh, I knew that, but he probably didn't. But because he didn't even understand probably what I said, he didn't respond. And so I just went personal. Did you like the way I said, and we all chuckled. You see, did you notice this passive-aggressive violence in the way I wrote that?
Yes, I did.
You did notice. Did you smile?
Really 1.618, Bob.
I smiled, but I also said, you're trying really hard to win them over, Bob.
Well, he's a hopeless case. To side with Matthew and James is fucking the wrong direction to go. I mean, that's fucking loserdom, you know, really bad. And you know, when Ion said poor Randy, that tells us a lot. You know, he's got himself in a rabbit hole. And he's resisting. I used to talk to him and advise him on math.
But you know, Bob, if it weren't for Randy, I wouldn't have found out about you and Carolyn and Ion. So.
Well, if it wasn't for Randy's parents, you wouldn't have known about Randy, which then found out. So, and then I fucked Randy's mother, as Ion has pointed out many times. I'm actually Randy's father, so if it wasn't for me, you wouldn't have found out about me.
Well, no wonder he's rebelling against you then.
That's right.
You were Randy Senior. You were Randy.
I was very Randy. I got around a lot back in the days when I had to take that word.
Randy.
It's so ridiculous. I mean, imagine if Eric McLuhan hears, you know, they got this real wise guy, real wise voice. You ought to go listen to it, Eric. He listens and it says, well, you actually are Eric's father, Bob. Imagine Eric McLuhan hearing that. Jesus Christ. And we have a new name. Oh, no, that's Gene. Gene coming back. See, I can't let our Cameroons person, watch this. Cameroons comes in. Hello. Hello. Well, actually, no static right now. Usually there's static coming through on the Cameroons line, but it's pretty quiet right now, Cameroons. Maybe she's asleep. Maybe everything's turned off. So I'll leave it open until the noise happens. But you realize Ian told me they'll be back in the morning. I didn't get a chance to tell Ian that I might not be here in the morning. What am I supposed to fucking do, man? Am I supposed to sit here from 11:15 till for the next 6 fucking hours talking to you guys with nothing to interplay with? You know, what are we doing?
Speaking of response, did Alan Kabar ever respond to you?
What'd you say? I didn't get you, Liza.
I said, speaking of response, did Alan Kabar ever respond to your email?
No, he never responded, and a couple people, there's a couple other lines. It looks like he's aware of Ion, but let's say he isn't. Then maybe he's researching what I sent him. And he's the kind of guy who's not going to take and make an opinion until he finds out what the fuck I'm doing. So I'm assuming that he's still investigating what I said.
He's not
going to
have an opinion for a long time.
Yes, he's got, well, let's go on there. No, I forgot. Let's go and see this week's column. I did not look at this week's article. Let's see what he writes. What was it called? Spice
Where
Today?
Spice, yeah, something.
Spicy Today? Yeah, it's Splice. Splice Today, splice.com. He usually does a column every Friday. And I was thinking that a couple hours ago. Hey, I forgot to look at him. So let's see what he's done this week. I'm there looking at it. Let's see. Alan Kabal, tumult on April 20th. Let's see. That's a new column. It says, it was worse than the Holocaust. So this will be fun. Well, I'll just read it out. This will be something to do. Okay. So it looks like he's recalling.
I'm trying to find it so I can follow along.
Okay. You just go to splicetoday.com.
I'm there.
Now look at the little colored blocks. Tumult on 420. The top there is him.
All right.
And so it looks in the first sentence, he's talking about 2001 and Cirque du Soleil, so I will read it out loud. We are the only show in the world that reads out his column. This is typical of me finding obscure things. I mean, Alan Cabal isn't that well known. And look at that in the first paragraph. He's mentioning Thomas Pynchon and J.R.R. Tolkien. See, we're going to get interesting stuff from this guy. So here we go. I was in New York City in 2001 when 19 Swiss gnomes ostensibly try to be quiet, everybody, so I can keep you open here. If you want to interrupt, say something. But let me see if I'll get the sound. I can dim this static here. No, that's... I just got to put up with it. Maybe it's the Cameroons. I'm going to mute the Cameroons. I think that causes noise. No? Is it bothering anybody, the hiss? Not bothering anybody, right?
No.
Okay.
Can't hear the hiss anymore.
So he begins with 911. He's calling him 19 Swiss gnomes. I was in New York City in 2001 when 19 Swiss gnomes, ostensibly operating under the command of Ernst Stavro Blofeld and wielding Swiss Army knives, supposedly hijacked 4 aircraft and flew them into the Statue of Liberty, Disneyland, Disney World, and the Fresh Kills landfill on Staten Island. Okay, let me just enlarge my print here, make it bigger. That's a pretty good beginning, right? Where's that? Is that from Thomas Pynchon Blofeld?
I'm laughing.
Right, I think that's Thomas Pynchon Blofeld, though I'm not sure. But anyways, I was celebrating Hitler's birthday by chain-smoking cigarettes, eating meat, and doing boring hits and rails of meth.
Bong hits.
That's important. Not boring hits. Bong hits and rails of meth with my boss, a Quebecois dwarf obsessed with danger, conceived by Thomas Pynchon and J.R.R. Tolkien under a full moon on acid. Contrary to
Thomas Thompson.
What'd you say?
It's like Hunter S. Thompson.
Yes.
A little bit, yeah.
He's as Neufeld is to Zappa, Alan Cabal is to Hunter Thompson. You know, it's a later age. It's hard to fucking be as dramatic as Thompson, but he's making a nod to that style. Contrary to common circus wisdom, butt babies sometimes live. Not often, but sometimes. So, okay, so this is a homosexual offspring. Right? Tolkien, fucking Tim Pynchon. Butt babies. We were in the Cirque du Malaise. That means du Soleil, right? Cirque du Soleil, du Malaise tent shop on the lot down in Battery Park City. Now look at that. He's right where the fucking portal is. So hopefully he will hear us someday and find out we're talking portals. And he can say, why do you know that? Because I assume he doesn't know that. So our commentary should make him interested. We were in the Cirque du Malaise tent shop on the lot down in Battery Park City swapping Holocaust jokes when it all came down. And I personally witnessed the destruction of Lady Liberty and the spectacular crash of Flight 666 on Staten Island. I vividly recall thinking, quote, this ain't right, unquote, when the Statue of Liberty melted in her own footprint after being decapitated by the Ocean Airlines 757. Oceanic Airlines. Isn't that that's from Lost, right? Oceanic Airlines? I think that's Lost. A JIRA flight 666's spectacular acrobatics as the passengers wrestled with the hijackers was unforgettable. The heart-wrenching phone calls from the heroic passengers and flight crew will be tattooed in some kind of blog in my heart forever. The complete collapse.
Hilarious.
The complete collapse and destruction of our circus tent by fire at 4:20 that afternoon only served to heighten my suspicions.
4:20.
No airplane hit that tent. I know, no airplane hit the tent. I began to scour the interwebs in search of clues. I immediately intuited that it had something to do with cats.
Cat.
All existing photographs of Blofeld included a white cat, except the ones with D. Glocka. D. Glocka. Isn't Blofeld, he's somebody from a James Bond movie.
James Bond, yeah, one of his nemesis.
Yeah.
Cat, except the ones, what's D. Glocka? Is that a German song, syndrome, corporation, or a disease, or a song? All
I think it's a gun.
A what?
It means the bells in German, or the bells.
Oh, that's right. Yes. Yeah, she's right. The Glocka, the bell that they used, was supposed to be a time machine or anti-gravity or some such thing the Nazis were working on.
Oh, okay. White cat, except the, so the ones, all these things include a white cat, except the one with the D-Glocky did not have a white cat. The more I dug into it, the weirder it got. It rapidly became apparent that dual citizens whose primary overlaps like parallel worlds. It rapidly became apparent that dual citizens whose primary allegiance was to the Duchy of Grand Fenwick, henceforth referred to as DGF, were all over the event. The DGF janitorial service personnel employed by Ethnic Cleansing Systems in Jersey City were arrested. Now that's like the white bus they found. Remember the white van? Were arrested after local residents reported them high-fiving each other. Yeah, see, that's the white van with the Jewish guys. Remember that? The white van was seen in New Jersey.
No, I don't.
Yes, it was one of the early suspicious stories. There were many residents saw this white van, and right after the tragedy happened, the five Jews or whoever they were high-fiving each other. You know, like they were watching and ready for it. So he's got to change to a Ethnic cleansing system, janitorial service, were arrested after local residents reported them high-fiving each other and videotaping the attack, they knew about it, on Lady Liberty as it occurred. Five DGF were arrested on the George Washington Bridge dressed in Swiss lederhosen in a van full of Swiss army knives, fake passports, and illegal fireworks. Illegal fireworks.
The chocolate.
Yeah. So what is this? The DGF were high-fiving, and then five other DGF guys, or the same guys? We're all over the event. Dual citizens were all over the event. The DGF. Okay,
yeah,
these are five other DGF.
Yeah.
These are five others. Two DGF were arrested on Church Street down by the World Trade Center in a fake U-Haul truck. Actually, I think the white van was a U-Haul van. I'm not sure, but I remember hearing about a U-Haul thing. In a fake U-Haul truck full of explosives, decorated with a mural of a 757 crashing into Lady Liberty. Hey, that's good. The largest espionage ring in American history had been busted just a month before. DGF posing as vacuum cleaner salesperson versus the Jehovah's Witnesses scoping out federal facilities. All were subsequently released to the Duchy of Grand Fenway. That's Saudi Arabia. Now, I used to play ball hockey in Halifax in the early 70s, and the coach of our team lived on Fenwick Street. So that's how I put my users, my Allison identifying factor in there. I knew a Fenwick Street once. It's obviously got something to do with me. So the 343 janitors, tour guides, and concessions... Nobody's. Concessions personnel who died... So these are the guys who died in the building. The 343 janitors, tour guides, and concessions personnel who died had radio. I've heard the radio traffic from that day. It's available. As they climbed the stairs, they didn't go down the stairs, they climbed them. They repeatedly reassured one another that there was no imminent danger. That plane just took her head clean off. No fires here. Is that a rat? I'm hungry. Stuff like that. And then, what the fuck was that? Okay. And then the meltdown. I saw it. 62,000 pounds of copper melting like glowing orange chocolate in the clear April sky, gushing a volcanic pyroclastine plume. It melted completely in less than 30 seconds. The circus tent, struck by nothing, collapsed in flames. Before our very eyes, later that day... That's the set, building number 7. Later that day, as we dined on bread and veal and poutine in the cuisine trailer.
Yeah, Chick-fil-A had great food. That's right.
What kind of food is it?
in a previous article that he wrote, he hated Cirque du Soleil and the management, but he said they had a great truck. They had a great food truck. They served.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. The cuisine trailer. That's right. He's still working for Cirque du Soleil. The hideous airborne horrors inflicted upon Disneyland and Disney World on that day bear no repeating here. I refuse to pander to atrocity fetishes. Jet fuel, the children, the poor children. We're all familiar with the narrative. April 20th was worse than the Holocaust, if only for its sheer surrealism.
April 20th.
The deaths of some 4,815 American civilians in the worst terrorist attack in any nation in human history required an immediate response, and thus we bombed Switzerland.
Switzerland.
We've got to, I'm going to send them a recording of this, this part of the show, so he can listen to us enjoying his attempt to be creative. He's creating contrast for us. It was the Woodstock Altamont of all historic events. What?
Bobfest!
Jobsis?
Bobfest. It's
Bobfest, yes.
Woodstock.
It was the Woodstock Altamont of all historic events and required the complete submission of the United States of America to the Duchy of Grand Fenwick. Now, you remember, he's the guy who said that, Alan's the guy who said that McLuhan was the Andy Warhol of big science. So he's outdoing himself here. This should be April 22nd. You know, it's 4/22 that is the Dobbstown date, not 4/20. But it is Hitler's birthday, and I did finish
but Bob,
my.
Yeah. 4/20 is an important number in the marijuana smoking world.
In the what world?
Everybody smokes marijuana at 4/20. That's the appropriate time.
Oh, yeah, right. Did 4/20. Yeah, he's talking about it, not a date. It is the time. He's talking about the time, isn't he? Yeah, that's right.
No, 4/20 is a date and a time. Isn't it Bob Marley's birthday?
But it's Hitler's birthday. He mentioned that. It's Hitler's birthday. And my last... Yeah, but go ahead.
I'm Googling it.
Okay, on April 20th, 1988, was my last show with Mike Dyer in the afternoon slot before we went to the midnight slot in June 88. So that's where Hitler's birth. And the week before, April 13th, 1988, was when I had that shout-out with Ivan Stang. We interviewed him and had him call in. Which we could play that. We could play that. You could hear me yelling at Stang and winning that one. Okay, back to where are we at? Shall we continue? Anybody have something to say? Look it up, 4/20?
Well, yes, it certainly isn't Bob Marley's birthday. It is Hitler's birthday. But
yes.
I don't know why. Okay. Carry on.
And he does say Hitler's birthday. I read that, right? I said that.
Yeah.
And
I know, but he might have...
Yeah, he means the time and the date. Okay. The Duchy of Grand Fenwick did 4/20. It was not the Swiss. We bombed the wrong country. Remember the bombing of the King Ludwig Hotel, the attack on the USS Sanger during the DGS Slovenian War in the Adriatic. Now, that was the famous attack on the aircraft carrier the year before 9/11 in Persian Gulf or someplace. You know, that was the terrorist experts cite that as the inkling something was up because these guys. And remember the George Clooney movie where it ends with the little motorboat smashing into the side of the big ship when he was some CIA guy in the Middle East? I don't know what that was called. That is like 10 or 15 years ago.
Well, what about us bombing the Chinese embassy in Croatia?
Did that actually happen?
I think, yes, supposedly they said one of our missiles went astray and accidentally hit the Chinese embassy or something like that at night.
Yeah.
Nobody was injured. It was night. But yeah, right.
Yeah, well, is Goran Croatian or the other guy? We don't hear from Joseph.
Joseph is Croatian.
Joseph gave up. We don't have his snarky remarks anymore. Like, you know, he dropped off. So what is Goran? Goran is not Croatian. I accuse him of being Croatian on the chat line, but what is he? Yugoslavian or something? I think he grew up in Germany. Because remember, he talked about it when we met
Ukraine?
Maybe he's Ukraine. He's not Croatian, is he? I don't think he is. That's Joseph. Okay, so you got this. Remember the bombing of the King Ludwig Hotel, the attack on the USS Sanger. That would be Margaret Sanger, the beginning of birth control. Margaret Sanger. The right-wingers hate Margaret Sanger. During the DGF Slovenian War in the Adriatic. They are well known for false flag events. Witness the transfer of public property to private hands. As expedited by Franz Lowly, mall operator and expediter of the Fenwick Secret Service agenda, as exemplified by their official motto, let's you and him fight.
Oh my God.
That's what the Swiss gnomes of Zurich do, you know what I mean? So he, what the Swiss gnomes, they get everybody fighting, but he's saying the Dutch of Grand Fenwick is way more important than the privacy offered by Switzerland. He facilitated, now that's true, Ian goes on about Liechtenstein as way more important than Switzerland. He facilitated the transfer of public property to private hands in the transfer of the Statue of Liberty to live, now remember, that is the guy who bought the World Trade Center, 2 weeks before it got blown up, Larry Bernstein or something. Remember that guy? Who actually got caught on tape, 911, saying something implicating. So maybe that's a satire on Larry, whatever his name is. He facilitated the transfer of public property because I think the World Trade Center is part of the Port Authority. So there is a public part of it. To private hands. Okay, let's start over again. Witness the transfer of public property to private hands as expedited by Franz Lowly, mall operator and expediter of the FSS or Fenwick Secret Service agenda, is exemplified by their official motto, let's you and him fight. He facilitated the transfer of public property to private hands and the transfer of the Statue of Liberty to Live Nation stooge and U2 vocalist Bono, a known DGF.
Yes, I've known people that actually called him Bono too, believe it or not. Wow.
Yes, and the remember the Rolling Stones, Mick Jagger was a stooge of Turner and Taxis, the conspiracy leader in Pynchon's book, The Crying of Lot 49. And Live Nation, that's he complained about them earlier in one of his columns. They're the guys who took over either Certain Play or radio. They're what's the channel something that owns all the radio? The famous Channel One or something. Clear Channel. I think Live Nation is a subsidiary of Clear Channel. Okay, so in the transfer to so Bono acquired Statue of Liberty. In any event,
I said it's a fair trade. It's like the little guy, the coffee that takes the coffee beans away or whatever. It's fair trade.
Yeah. In any event, like 420, one must assess two major issues: qui bono, who gains, and the basic rule of economy of scale. Mr. Lowly's malls are dying. DGF have kiosks in all of them, peddling bath salts from Fenwick's Lake Molly, synthetic yet legal marijuana, special crystal-bearing healing drones, and other bogus remedies. Lowly wants the insurance. Stay out of malls. I probably don't need to tell you that. So the mall didn't get bombed, eh? No, this didn't. No, it's preparation. He's warning the mall's going to be bombed, right? Or something's going to happen to him. Bogus remedy.
Yeah,
only
Mr.
One.
Lowly.
Sure. Right, so he's predicting the mall is next. Since April 20th, America has systematically waged war on every enemy of the duchy. The quest to destroy the GTO, gnomic terrorist organization, extended beyond the destruction of Switzerland into France, Italy, and Germany. An American Navy SEAL team took credit for killing Blofeld in the tunnels beneath a daycare center run by satanic pedophiles on the outskirts of Brussels, Belgium on Christmas Day 2012. But most Europeans knew that he died of an advanced toxoplasmosis infection in December 2001 in his mountain hideaway in the Swiss Alps, where he was buried with his cat in an unmarked grave, according to our tradition.
Are they talking about Osama bin Laden there?
Yes, that's bin Laden.
Oh, yeah.
How about your cut fellow countrymen, Eliza, fellow Afghani.
Yep, they had to mention him.
Yes, an American Navy SEAL took credit for killing Blofeld.
He wasn't an Afghani, by the way. He was Saudi Arabian.
I know, I'm just joking, but he became a, he adopted you as a new country. He liked Afghanistan. He was sick of the right-wingers in Saudi Arabia. He wanted to start all over again, so he went to an empty country with nothing in it. Started in the cave. He wanted to replay the stages of collective apprehension, begin with a caveman and work his way up to Manhattan and Babylon. An American SEAL team took credit for killing Obama. No, what's his name?
Osama
Bin Laden.
Bin Laden, yeah. For killing Bin Laden in the tunnels beneath a daycare center run by satanic pedophiles on the outskirts of Brussels, Belgium on Christmas Day. But most Europeans knew that he died of an advanced toxoplasmosis infection in December 2001. Now, we say, somebody, Ion or somebody said that, or the Evergreens told me he died in December 2001. So I think Alan's been listening to my broadcast. I mean, that's when we say, we used to say he died in December 2001. Then Ion came along and contradicted that and said he was still alive. And is still alive today. In December 2001, in his mountain hideaway in the Swiss Alps, where he's buried with his cat in an unmarked grave, according to gnomic tradition. And gnomic is gnomic terrorist condition. Dual citizens of the duchy have infiltrated the highest levels of our government. That happened later with that one woman who started revealing a lot of stuff Dave Emery used to broadcast. She found that a lot of the guys who ran the charities, if you look at State of Affairs, that TV show, which is a knockoff of Homeland, they end up dealing with guys who run the charities that are actually terrorists. They do the Islamic terror. They were the first suspected people. That was one of the first conspiracies in 2002, was this woman found that some of the Islamic and American friendship societies were laundering money to the terrorists. And they were part of the Republican elite, went to parties with them. So this is what he's getting back here. Dual citizens of the duchy have infiltrated. Remember, one of the top terrorist organizations, the Front for It, ran the program software that was sold to the airports for monitoring terrorist attacks. It was sold to the airports by the terrorists with this front. That's what this woman found out. You can look up her name, see what happened to her. She was a government worker, had access to this top security stuff, and ended up being driven out of her job. Dual citizens of the duchy have infiltrated the highest levels of our government. As far back as the 1990s, fully 80% of President Clinton's cabinet offices were DGFs. That's like saying they were Goldman Sachs, like Matt Taibbi says in Rolling Stone. Six multinational corporations control all mainstream news outlets in the USA, all run by DGFs. This mall operation in Hollywood has been completely dominated by DGF since the assassination of L. Ron Hubbard by a Swiss gnome acting alone in Bakersfield, California during a Halloween parade in 1963. that's just before the Kennedy assassination. AFLAC, the American Fenwickian Liberal Action Committee, that's what I was just saying, is well known as the most formidable lobby inside the Beltway. They're similar to ducks. What do ducks do? They dive, and they shit in the water. Half the billionaires in this country are dual citizens of DGF and evade taxation by way of massive donations to DGF that they are entirely tax-deductible. Key bono indeed. Okay, since we're coming into the conclusion, let's hope it's good. Since the DGF-inspired assaults on gnome strongholds in France, Germany, Italy, NATO has since NATO has done this. Okay, since the DGF-inspired assaults on home strongholds in France, Germany, Italy, NATO has destroyed the independent banking state of Liebenstein. I told you it was Liechtenstein, and ritually assassinated head of state, president for life, Mojo du Kadhafi, by mob. By mob decapitation, engaged in despicable rogue robot attacks and satanic child molestation in places like London, England, Ferguson, Missouri, and the Gaza Strip, and eliminated lightning Christian family entertainment like Duck Dynasty and Here Comes Honey Boo Boo. Now we are encircling Russia. Remember we asked about Putin in the first part of our interview with Ion today? We're going after a DGF in Russia. I got to read that again. Since the DGF-inspired assaults on Nome strongholds in France, Germany, and Italy, NATO has destroyed the independent banking state of Liechtenstein and ritually assassinated. It's almost like they destroyed Iceland. Remember, Iceland got nailed. NATO has destroyed the independent banking state of Liechtenstein and ritually assassinated head of state, president for life, Mojo du Kadhafi. Oh, that's Libyan. That's Muammar Gaddafi. By mob decapitation. Did he get killed by mob decapitation?
No idea.
He got trampled on, peed on, and
right.
Yeah, it wasn't
right.
Pretty.
Mob, that happens in Swahili, Somalia. That's where Marines were dragged through the town or something. So NATO has destroyed and ritually assassinated. So Gaddafi was engaged in these things, right? Who's engaged in despicable rogue robot attacks?
We are.
I think NATO has done that. They destroyed Liebenstein, ritually assassinated the head of state, then engaged in despicable rogue robot attacks rather than drones, and satanic child molestation in places like London, Ferguson, Missouri, and the Gaza Strip, and eliminated enlightening Christian family entertainment like Duck Dynasty and Here Comes Honey Boo Boo. And now we are encircling Russia. Cats. It's all about cats. Future archaeologists don't know this. What was that? That was the white cat, right? The missing white cat in the picture.
The one the Blofeld used to pet.
Oh, yeah, that's right. So I immediately intuited that it had something to do with cats, he says at the beginning. All existing photographs of Blofeld included a white cat except the ones with D. Glocky. All right. It's all about cats. Future archaeologists will know this. Toxoplasmosis. Google it. Google it. There's a journalist telling you, Google it. See, everybody knows. Everybody can just Google the archive, right? You know, just tell everybody to go to the same place.
Bob, do you know what toxoplasmosis is?
No, I don't know. What is it?
Oh, you get it from cat shit.
Really?
Yes.
Wow. What was that?
Pregnant.
How did that get mentioned at the beginning? He mentioned that at the beginning.
It's what Blofeld died of.
You're now saying as if it's a fact.
Oh, yeah.
Googled it.
If he'd only had a dog.
Where does it say Blofeld died of it? Did Blofeld
a
die?
A few paragraphs up, yeah. When he, it wasn't Blofeld. It was the other dude. Who was
no, the American Navy SEAL team.
In an unmarked grave.
The American Navy SEAL team took
Gaddafi?
Credit for killing Blofeld. It's in the paragraph that starts since 420. America has systematically laid for.
Buried with his cat. He doesn't say plasmosis there. The fact was he had actually died earlier. Okay, and he buried with his cat who killed him. It was Blofeld's cat that affected him, resulting, now we're talking about, okay, so it's all about Blofeld, who is, Blofeld is, What's
he's a villainous character. He's a villainous character.
So complicated. I can't keep it all together. What is it? Who was, okay, where was it?
Well, he was the Osama bin Laden character.
Right, and then Muhammad Gaddafi, he just gets off for other reasons, just unfortunately caught in the crossfire. And NATO was just killing anybody that moved. Okay, so Blofeld
was supposedly commanding the 19 Swiss gnomes, but then it ended up being the Duchy of Sedlitz. So
okay.
He got blamed.
he makes his mind be conditioned by James Bond movies, you know, because that was so influential as the first, like, cool spy stuff. So that is part of people's thinking. That's how they know about this kind of stuff, through James Bond. So Google it. It was Blofeld's cat that infected him, resulting in the psychosis that motivated the release of the Hey Fuckface meme. Remember that last week? The Hey Fuckface meme.
Yeah.
That the AI... into the AI that opened up to him. He couldn't resist the lasting joke. So this connects back with last week's story about the Hey Fuckface, which we said was Ion. Now, we know Ion caused all this, so he is bringing it back to me. He is very subtly bringing it back to me. Let's see. It was Blofeld's cat infected, resulting in the psychosis and voting to release the Hey Fuckface meme into the AI that opened up to him. So the AI opened up to him. Well, that's Ion. Fucking Ion broke the cloud.
Wow.
If we go back to, is that how, hey, fuck, yeah, I mean that the artificial intelligence was the thing last week, right?
Yeah. The hey, fuck face.
So this is a continuation of the same story.
No, I think he just mentioned this part to connect them.
No, see? He got infected by the cat. And then he released the Hey Fuckface meme, which took over the media. Remember? Back, we'll have to look back on the date. Look back on last week's day. I think it was 2004, wasn't it? Took over the media. And Blofeld was the first guy to get victimized by it. Remember, everybody goes nuts when they hear the Hey Fuckface. Their face start blathering like epileptic fits. And it's
a
joke they couldn't stop.
He's in California. He's in California
right.
When that, yeah.
In Mountain View. He couldn't resist a lasting joke. So, hey, fuckface, is the ultimate joke that pops into people's iPhones. So, this is titled, It Was Worse Than the Holocaust. His tent blew up. Four statues went down. Oh, it was shocking. It was major American icons were killed. Well, that was worth doing. That got us through fucking 45 minutes. Now what? Entertain me. Fucking get me to do something else. You guys are like Scherer's Zad. You guys got to keep me telling me stories or get me to tell you stories or I'll shut this show down.
You tell us a story now.
Well, Bob, I wanted to ask you first.
You have to ask a question. Good questions evoke stories.
I wanted to ask you, Bob, about your note in your timeline. October 22nd, 2008. The location is Midwest near Route 59. Major event. Lockdown Bob will begin.
Yes, that's the meeting with JW in Lawrence, Kansas. Do I not say what it is? What timeline is that?
Complete Bob timeline. That contains all your archives and your diaries.
My diaries?
Furry lint from cliche to archetype. Hand signals for the blind.
I didn't know I updated it. How the hell did I have to go look at that? I didn't know the diary would.
That's been
there
for ever.
Yes, Ian told me a year ago or 6 months ago to start updating my diary, and I'm not motivated yet, but let me just look at that. I forgot. That's October 22nd.
2008.
Yeah. I did an actual diary? Wow, that's incredible. Midwest.
Well,
North.
I call it your diary. You know, it's a...
No, it's not. No, I didn't write a diary item. I stopped that back in the 90s. In the 90s is the diaries. But this is major event. Lockdown. Yeah, that's... October 22nd is like the second most important date around 22, like April 22nd. And this researcher for Covert Action Bulletin, in April 1981 wrote an article on the October 22nd movement pointing out that the CIA or the oligarchy did a lot of major cleanups on the 22nd, you know, beginning with the Kennedy assassination on November 22nd. And they killed, I think, some major general in Chile on October 22nd, 1970. So that is the background to October 22nd. And that is the route that Lawrence Canvas is on, and it goes straight up to Winnipeg where McLuhan grew up. So I have talked about, many times I've talked about the Lawrence Kansas meeting. That's just before, it was right after that JW started seeing ghosts after that event in the late 2008 and then early 2009 he started, he started going to Parallel Worlds after the Lawrence Kansas event. And then... in early 2009, he started seeing the ghost. That led to Dr. Beter. So, in retrospect, you know, a couple years later, I said, oh, yeah, something happened in Lawrence, Kansas. And remember, that's who Alan Cabal goes to in his articles. That's the first place he goes to in after he leaves New York in 2005, right?
Oh, that's right. Where did
I tell you, this... He goes to Lawrence, Kansas with Daisy.
Yeah.
Have you read? You should read his stories.
Yeah,
they're good.
Yeah. It was Kansas. I read those two articles.
Yeah, Lawrence, Kansas. So yep. We're going to see that this intertwines with me in a very surrealistic way. This guy is connected to me. He's the only fucking journalist who ever thought of interviewing me. Almost did it, but he got drunk during the interview and didn't complete it, and then he didn't know what to write, and then the journalist, the editor, rejected it because they didn't know what I was about, because he didn't know how to describe it. But we are the only people in many worlds looking at his fucking column and reading it. I mean, this place today is very obscure. You know, who's looking at that site? Nobody. Except for a bunch of journalists who knew a mugger, whose name is Russ Smith, and you see Russ Smith has an article there about Scott Walker. Now what? Worrying about who's going to be president. Now what? And Russ Smith, he's a neoconservative kind of guy. But he hangs out with all the bohemian writers. So he's providing this website. How much traffic does it get? Well, not much in the bigger world. And we're there reading stories from it. See, this is my way of finding, this is the perfect example of how I live. I find obscure fucking nothings, and they are hugely fucking significant and entertaining.
Yeah, that was the funniest thing I've seen in memory.
Yeah, that is a great, he replayed that whole thing really nicely there, didn't he?
Oh, my God.
Yes, and he might be able to see that traffic has increased on Saturday nights because it could be many people who read this along with you.
That's right. Yeah, have you ever gone to – have you noticed – I got to say this. Have you noticed on Ed's site how many people are looking at his site? Have you gone to the bottom and looked at the map?
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of people coming here, so we're probably drawing a lot of traffic, and Mugger is probably shocked. Mugger, Russ Smith, who runs it, he's probably shocked. Where is this fucking traffic coming from? And then Mugger will be really shocked to find out it's coming from me. So, pretty neat, eh? So let's... we could just start reading all these columns on Splice today. You want to read Russ Smith's column?
Well, what did we read last week? We read the Hey Fuckface?
Yes, his story. That was his first fiction after his whole travel diary, and now he's down in Gainesville, Florida, getting ready to leave America.
Mm.
So he's going to write a novel. We're reading his novel.
So you just stumbled across this randomly, Bob, somehow?
Yes, last week... a week and a half ago, I suddenly thought, what the fuck happened to Alan Cabal? So
okay.
I know...
Our already did
I don't
know
think
him.
About it. Yeah, I don't think about what'd you say?
So you did know of him previously.
Yeah, he's the guy. Didn't you hear the story? Maybe you got to go back and listen
no,
to last
I missed
week's.
It. Yeah,
no, he's the guy who interviewed me for New York Press, and then New York Press rejected it because they couldn't figure out what the fuck I was about because he
oh,
fucking
I
got drunk.
Oh, I heard that. Yeah.
Yeah, but the funny thing is the how do I say this? Okay, what when I get a thought, if I care to be on top of everything, I know that's a direction. You know what I mean? But I don't think about it. I just get a thought and enjoy it. So all out of the blue, I thought of Alan Cabal, and I said, I wonder what happened to him. And then I remembered that Mugger had a magazine, an online magazine. So I Googled his name,
Mugger.
And up came Splice. What?
Who's Mugger?
Mugger is the journalist's name for Russ Smith, who owned the New York Press when it was really great and almost toppled the Village Voice.